Curled it. Hey, Alex. Hey, Beth. Hey, Courtney and Melanie and Elizabeth. Elizabeth, do you go by Betsy? Is that what you go by? You can tell me in the chat if you want. You watched Magic Mike last night, like in person or the movie, Courtney? Which one? Like you actually went to the Magic Mike show, like in Vegas. Okay, you are Betsy. Okay, you watched the movie. Okay, I haven't seen the movie. Have not seen the movie. There's totally a Magic Mike show in Vegas. I haven't been to it, but there is a Magic Mike show in Vegas. Believe it or not, I will tell y'all, David and I love going to Vegas. We don't love Vegas. Trust me, we do not love Vegas, but we love going to Vegas and going to Cirque du Soleil shows and burlesque shows. Those are the bomb. But we have not been to Magic Mike. I would like to go to Magic Mike though. So yeah, Courtney, if you're ever in Vegas, go to the Magic Mike show. Hey, Christine, good to see you. So good to see you. Marianne is still connecting to audio. Oh my God, Jamie Burlesque is like, who has been to a burlesque show before, ever? Anybody? Yeah, Brandy, was it amazing? Yeah, it is. Who else? Who did I miss? Who's been to burlesque? Nobody else? Okay. Y'all, you have to go to Vegas. Yeah, you have to go to Vegas and go to a burlesque show. I'm sure you can go to burlesque shows all over the place, but I don't know where to find one in Minnesota, so we go all the way to Vegas. Do you live in Vegas, Betsy? Marianne, it's so good to see you here. I've missed you. You live in Vegas and you've never been to a burlesque show. Man, I would spend my whole paycheck going to burlesque shows. Whole paycheck. There's lots of burlesque shows in Calgary. Interesting. Yep, we went to X Burlesque at the Flamingo. And then the other burlesque show we went to, what was it called, babe? It wasn't better or worse, it was just different. I can't remember. Oh, the fantasy show at the Luxor. That's right. They were both really, really, really good. The fantasy show, though, at the Luxor, they had this Ukrainian acrobat who did pole, and like you could see the definition of every muscle on this girl's body. Like she was so freaking strong. Like she could just hang off the pole like this, like straight out. So like her core muscles and shit, like, oh my gosh. Yeah. And the MC was a singer. So it was like more of a true burlesque show where there was singing and she had such a good voice and she was hilarious. It was, yes, on date night, go to the X Burlesque show at the Flamingo and get VIP seating. Because if you get VIP seating, the comedian at the beginning will talk to you and she'll make fun of you. And it's great. Lenka, hello. Hello, hello. So good to see all of you. Okay, I'm so glad that I didn't just like turn on the camera and start because so many of you have come in a teeny bit after our normal start time, which is fine, by the way. It's fine. Everyone, please send David good healing vibes. He has a fever today and does not feel well. So, but he's still here. He's still in the chat, and we'll be dropping links and helping you with whatever in the chat if you need it. Yeah, what else? Who was enjoying the music I was playing when we first got on? Yeah. Okay. That is a Minnesota band called Cloud Cult, and it's one of their very early albums from like, I guess it's not too early, 2016, so 8 years ago. We've actually seen them do that show live, and it's so good. yeah. Thank you all so much. I don't like it when David's sick. It feels like our world just like slows down when David gets sick. Like not in a great way. It's like, oh, I need you to get better. We have so many things that I need you to do. We're supposed to be getting new chicks this week, baby chicks. Any day now. Our area in Minnesota last night, we got 7.5 inches of rain in like 10 hours, you guys. Like flooding everywhere. We live up on a mountain, so thankfully we're fine. But like, oh my gosh, like flooding freaking everywhere. It's crazy. Okay. I'm gonna close the chat. Is everybody feeling ready for tonight? Yeah. Please turn on your camera if you can. I love seeing your faces. It makes me feel less alone and less like I'm talking to blank screens. If you can't, I totally understand, and that's fine. As always, David will be in the chat, dropping links, helping you with any kind of tech issue that you may have or any customer service related question that you might have. Slides are included with the replay, which should probably, it'll probably be out tomorrow. He's really good about getting the replays up pretty fast. So yeah, tonight's workshop is called Expand, and I will go ahead and share my screen and we will get going. All right. Welcome to Expand, everyone. This is the workshop where we talk about your window of tolerance and how to make it bigger or how to accept that it is what it is. So yeah, let's get going. You are recording, right, David? I'm not hallucinating that, right? Okay, good. Just making sure. All right. Welcome to Expand, everyone. In this episode of More About Myself, I'm going to share with you my favorite music. So here's my favorite music. Do not make fun of me that still at the very top of my list is Dave Matthews and Tim Reynolds, not Dave Matthews Band. Okay. Dave Matthews Band is too overstimulating for me. Like there's so much going on, it's too much. But Dave Matthews and Tim Reynolds acoustic, when it's just them and their two guitars, the Live at Luther College album from 1994 or something is my favorite. I also really like 90s pop and indie music and 90s country. I like chill spiritual shit, sound bowls and Gregorian monks and all that stuff. I love Norse heathen music. If any of you are familiar with like the kind of music that's on the Vikings show, there's a band called Helvagen, no, Ordruna. They have a song called Helvagen. Ordruna is the band's name, and they just have this really intense like Norse music with like drums and skulls and like shit like that. It's awesome. And then I also really like Scottish Gaelic and Celtic folk music, like a lot. So yeah, those are my favorite types of music. As you know, I am not a licensed healthcare provider, and this is not meant to be used for diagnosing or treating or substituting mental and physical healthcare. And also, you guys know, like, I trust you. I just have to say it, I feel like, but screenshot my stuff, share it on Instagram, tag me. I don't care. This is our third, sorry, this is our fourth workshop. That should say fourth, not third. Fourth workshop in this series. And our group coaching call for this workshop is next Tuesday, June 25th. So if you haven't marked that on your calendar, please do. And then our next workshop, our fifth workshop, is on Wednesday, July 10th at 5 p.m. Central. And then we will have a group coaching call following that on Tuesday, July 16th. And that's the workshop about building our resilience. Through responsibility, using our agency, and setting boundaries with self and with others. So it's a really, really good one. Tonight we're going to talk about your window of tolerance. So who is familiar with the term window of tolerance? Okay. Fewer than I thought. Yay. I'm actually going to teach something new that you don't know tonight. Wonderful. So the window of tolerance is a concept that was developed by Dr. Dan Siegel. It describes the optimal zone of arousal for a person to function in daily life. We are more able to manage our emotions when they are inside our window of tolerance. So, the state of your nervous system is the only thing that determines what you're able to tolerate, whatever is inside or outside of your window of tolerance. Don't worry, I have lots of diagrams to illustrate this for you. So here's the first one. So the black box is the window of tolerance. When you are in that window, that is when you are feeling safe, familiar, you feel okay. It's your comfort zone. You're good in your window of tolerance. All of the things that are outside your window of tolerance register as this isn't okay, this isn't familiar, this is uncomfortable, this is potentially unsafe. That's where our triggers live, is outside our window of tolerance. So when we're inside our windows of tolerance, we can feel grounded, open, flexible. We can be present, curious. We're emotionally regulated. We are calmly aroused, like we're alert, but not anxious, right? There's a difference. And we can be calm without being tired. We can also access like full breathing. We can think clearly, make good decisions, make eye contact, hold multiple realities and perspectives at once, access our intuition and self-trust, use our agency and self-responsibility because we have access to our prefrontal cortex, and communicate calmly and clearly. So being inside your window of tolerance is lovely, right? It's also perfectly normal for your window of tolerance to change. It will expand and contract based on the state of your nervous system at any given time. And as you know, the state of your nervous system changes often. So it would make sense that your window of tolerance would also change. So examples of when your window of tolerance might be smaller. If you're sick, if you didn't sleep well the night before, that can affect what you can tolerate the next day. If you're going through a bout of insomnia, right? The longer you go without sleep, the less you can tolerate. If your primary intimate relationship is experiencing some conflict or confusion or disconnection, that can make you feel like you're able to tolerate less stress in the rest of your life. If you spend too much time scrolling or consuming the news, that can also affect the capacity that you have to tolerate other stressors in your life. If you're hungry or hangry, then your window of tolerance may be really small. I know when I'm hangry, like the bullseye is the food and nothing else matters and nothing else is important until I get to the food. So my window of tolerance is smaller. Your window of tolerance can also change from day to day, even from morning to evening. It can change from hour to hour. It can fluctuate depending on who you're with and the safety of that relationship. So my window of tolerance with David is extremely wide. There is so much I can tolerate and handle when it comes to David. My window of tolerance with other people, not so wide because I don't have the level of safety that I have in those relationships like I have with David. Also, our menstrual cycles as women heavily influences our window of tolerance. And you may feel like you can tolerate a lot more, like from day two, three of your period until right after you ovulate, and then you get into that luteal phase of your cycle and your tolerance goes way down. That's also super, super normal. Doesn't mean there's something wrong, not pathological. So we're not going to exactly talk about how to make your window of tolerance bigger and keep it that way. We are going to talk about how to make it bigger, but we're not going to talk about how to keep it that way. Because if your window of tolerance shrinks, that's body wisdom. And we want to honor that because our bodies are really smart. But the body doesn't operate in nuance the way that the mind can, the regulated mind can. Your body doesn't see the gray, right? We know that our nervous systems and our limbic brain are really only concerned with survival. So it's very life and death, it's very binary. So widening your window of tolerance and then being like, okay, great, I can tolerate so much, I can tolerate everything. Now let's figure out how to keep it that way. No. So whatever you can or cannot tolerate is just information. So, if I am talking about the window of tolerance and you're like, shit, mine is really small. There's so much that I'm not okay with. There's so much that's outside my comfort zone. I'm uncomfortable all the time. Like, if that's what you're judging about yourself, see if you can be curious about that and just take it as neutral data from your body. This thing is not tolerable for you right now. Okay. Like it doesn't have to mean anything about you. If you judge what you can or can't tolerate, that's a totally different matter. If you compare what you can or can't tolerate to other people, that's a different matter. And if you compare yourself to a past version of you who once had a wider window of tolerance, that's also another matter entirely. But whatever you can or can't tolerate is literally just information. When you take the judgment out of it, when you take the comparison out of it, it's just, okay, this is what I can tolerate today or right now. And this is what I can't. It's just data. Widening your window of tolerance is an ongoing process of expansion and contraction. So, Newton's third law of physics, for those of you who don't remember from high school, is for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. This applies to literally everything. That's why it is a law of physics. So, for every expansion, there is a contraction, and it must be so. It just is this way. We cannot be in a constant state of expansion all the time. Many of us want the expansion and we don't want the contraction. Not only is that unrealistic, it's physically and energetically impossible. So, if you've been going through a time of great expansion, it's not bad or wrong. You're not doing anything bad or wrong when you experience a contraction following that state of expansion. And contractions are not bad or wrong. And it's not wrong if you go back into a state of expansion afterwards. It's a fluctuating, in and out, expand, contract kind of thing that's ever flowing. Many people do an expansive thing, or they try an expansive thing, they take a risk only to find out that it is not actually within their window of tolerance. I did this with ethical non-monogamy. I did it, I tried it, and then I found out, nope, not for me. It was way outside my window of tolerance. And when we have a big reaction because we were outside of our windows of tolerance, we often judge ourselves or we judge whatever we did. So I tried it, it didn't work, it's not for me. If I had done that thing right, I wouldn't feel this way. Anytime I try something new, this, whatever the contraction is, always happens. Those are just some examples of judgments that we have whenever we try expansive things or we take risks and it doesn't go the way that we think it should, or the way we hoped, or we thought we could tolerate something, and then we find out that we couldn't. There's often lots of judgment. So, just because you do an expansive thing and then you feel the resulting contraction does not mean that that expansive thing was bad or wrong or not for you or that you did it wrong. Like, I don't believe I did non-monogamy wrong. I don't believe non-monogamy is bad. I don't even believe that it's not for me. I just know. That when I am in it and my partner starts having very real and normal feelings of jealousy and insecurity, that's what feels like it's outside my window of tolerance. And so I have made the sovereign decision that I just don't want to add that stressor to my life because I don't have to. Like, it's not a need that I have. So I choose to not have that stressor. I stay in my window of tolerance, and it's okay to make those sovereign choices. We don't always have to take the risk or do the scary thing. So often, the contraction that we have brings up feelings and trauma that we can still carry. So, things like self-doubt, inauthenticity, self-judgment, shame, and fear. How else, right? If we didn't try the expansive thing and then feel the resulting contraction, or try the expansive thing and then feel the trigger, how else would we be aware of some of these lingering feelings and possibly unprocessed traumas unless we had the contraction to show us? Like, hey, here's still this thing that you haven't fully processed yet, or here's this thing that's still here that you didn't realize was here until you tried this expansive thing and then you got blindsided by it. Like, again, it's just information and data. It's not anything to judge. Contraction is so necessary and it's actually a gift. It's okay if you think I'm crazy for saying that. Simply doing expansive things, which might be outside your window of tolerance now, we get to initiate ourselves into our own deep parts and we get to heal on a deeper level. So that's why the contraction is a gift. We may not feel like it's a gift when we're in it. When we're in the contraction, we'd be like, shit, this is kicking my ass. But we can often see afterwards, like, wow, what a gift that was. Like, what an opportunity that was to face and heal this part of myself that wouldn't have gotten opened up if it hadn't been for that time. The real flex is moving through the contraction and all of the accompanying self-doubt, fear, second guessing, shame, whatever, without becoming stuck in it. We don't have to be stuck in the contraction. We cannot be in an ever contracting state, just like we can't be in an ever expanding state. And we aren't meant to stay in expansion or contraction, either one. We're always moving through it. So, as you are widening or expanding your window of tolerance and you feel any resulting contractions, just notice. I feel like I say just notice like about everything. Just notice. Notice that there might be a voice in your head that says you did the wrong thing. Notice that there might be a judgment that you weren't following your intuition. That is part of the contraction too. When we do expansive things and then we have that voice, it's like, oh, you did it wrong. Nope, you did it bad. It was bad. You shouldn't have done that. That's just the contraction after doing an expansive thing. It's not necessarily reflective of absolute truth. The contraction isn't punishment. It doesn't mean that you aren't healing. It doesn't mean that you've regressed. It literally doesn't mean anything about you other than you're experiencing a contraction following a period of expansion. Contraction is part of expansion. Expansion is part of contraction. Widening your window of tolerance is a dance between these two equal and opposite reactions. So we can be aware of the contraction. We can notice the stories that the voice in our head tells us about it. We can feel the contraction above all, feel the contraction, and you will move through it into expansion again. And sometimes contractions are tiny and they don't last very long. And sometimes contractions can be like a big long time. I've experienced both. Now we're going to talk about your window of tolerance and your nervous system. So, as a reminder, here is our polyvagal ladder. My hope is that by the end of this Feel Without Fear group, that you will have this memorized in your head so that anytime I bring up the word or term polyvagal ladder, you can picture it in your head. Or if you're trying to have a conversation with someone else, you can explain it to them because you've memorized it. I want this to osmose into your cells. This is why I talk about it all the time. So when we are outside of our window of tolerance, we are somewhere in here. Okay. This is where we are in the polyvagal ladder. It has everything to do with nervous system activation. So when we're outside our windows of tolerance, it is because we are either hypo-aroused or hyper-aroused. So what's the difference between dysregulation and hyper or hypo-arousal? I have another diagram for you. So this is kind of my way of explaining that. So here's when you're inside your window of tolerance in your comfort zone, everything is safe and familiar and okay. When you're kind of at the edge of your window, that's like dysregulation zone. Like if you can catch yourself in dysregulation before it moves into hyper or hypoarousal, great. If not, you will learn how to do that. It's just a process of being present with whatever you're feeling. Hyperarousal is when we're like way to the extreme, dysregulated. So hyperarousal is more of a fight flight state, a big fight flight state. Hypoarousal is more of the like extreme shutdown state. So extreme depression, chronic fatigue, things like that. Okay, so hyperarousal, if you'll notice, it feels like a chronic fight flight. So anger, rage, out of control, anxiety, panic, hypervigilance, sleeplessness, an exaggerated startle response, emotional flooding, you can't wind down, you're overstimulated, or you're experiencing a lot of digestive issues, also sometimes skin issues. Those are all examples of what you might feel if you're in a hyper aroused state. And hypoarousal is the other end of the spectrum. So shutting down, dissociated, exhausted, chronic fatigue, feeling dead emotionally, your affect is flat, you want to sleep all the time, disoriented, totally frozen, numb, zoned out, not really wanting to eat, and your digestion is like slowed way, way, way down. So you're more on the constipated side of things. So your nervous system is like a bucket. And you guys have probably seen me talk about this on Instagram a little bit, but I go into a lot more detail here. So the nervous system literally is like a bucket, and it has to hold everything in your life, every stressor, every relationship, every bad thing that's ever happened to you, every good thing that's ever happened to you, every physical illness you've ever experienced, everything. Your nervous system has to hold it, process it, and deal with all of it because that's how you're navigating your way through life. So the bucket is the metaphorical bucket of the nervous system is placed under the metaphorical leak in the ceiling. The leaky ceiling is just life. Like it's everything in life, it's all the water that's filling the bucket because there's a leak in the ceiling. So, things that are leaking from the ceiling are obviously childhood trauma, eating shitty food, not getting enough sleep, being in unhealthy relationships, too much scrolling, when you're sick or when you're in pain, if you do alcohol or drugs, if you don't have free time, whatever your perception of reality is, any stories that you have about your parents or your partner or yourself or whatever, your nervous system is holding all of that. And that's just life that's leaking from the ceiling. And the bucket of the nervous system is placed under the leak and it's holding all of that to try to keep it from spilling all over the place, making a mess and ruining the floor. When the bucket is getting close to reaching its capacity before it has overflowed, that's when we're dysregulated. So we're taking on more water, we're taking on more water, we're taking on more water, but it still hasn't leaked all over the floor yet. But that we know when the dysregulation is building, we can feel our capacity becoming less and less and less. When the bucket is totally filled and we don't have any more capacity, that's when it spills all over the place. And that's when we're either hyper or hypo aroused. Like you can't hold one more fucking thing. That's hyper arousal. Now let's talk about nervous system states, emotions, and your window of tolerance. So once again, here we have our polyvagal ladder. I would like for you to notice that every state of the polyvagal ladder has a correlating emotion. So the emotion for the social ventral vagal state of the nervous system is safety. It's a feeling of safety. It's a felt sense of safety. The primary emotion of play, which if you will remember, play is a combination state of your sympathetic activation combined with the ventral vagal response that creates the state of play. The primary emotion for the state of play is joy. Then we move into our primary sympathetic activation, which is fight and flight. The primary emotion of the fight response is anger. The primary emotion of the flight response is perseverance. Freeze is a combination state. It's a secondary state when the gas of our fight flight response is combined with the brakes of our shutdown or dorsal vagal response. We get the combination state of freeze. The primary emotion of freeze is judgment. And then we come all the way down to the bottom, the shutdown state, the primary emotion is shame. So we are going to talk about each of these emotions and what they look like in their unintegrated and in their integrated form. Right, but before we go further, energy, sorry, emotion is energy in motion. It's all energy. We're just working with energy. Emotions and energy are neutral. They are not bad. They are not good. Only judgment makes them so. Only judgment says this emotion is bad, but this one is good. This one is positive, but this one is negative. But on their own, emotions are just neutral energy that moves. That's it. So, sensation and feeling in our bodies is what tells us if we're safe, dysregulated, or hyper or hypoaroused. The line between dysregulation and hyper or hypoarousal is a blurry one, and it is can be different from person to person. It can change based on what's happening at your in your life at that time, based on how much sleep you've had, the level of intimacy in a relationship. Oftentimes, when there's more intimacy in a relationship, we register things as more of a threat, or we can be more hypervigilant. For me, I tend more towards dysregulation and hyperarousal when it's wintertime versus when it's summertime. Winter tends to be a harder time of year for me than summer does. All of that is really, really normal. None of it is pathological. So, for the purposes of this workshop, we're going to study dysregulation. The goal is not, I'm trying to heal my nervous system so I never get dysregulated. We can dismiss that. We have to accept that dysregulation is our body's wisdom. It is a protective mechanism. It's necessary. We never out-heal being dysregulated. We can get to places where we are less dysregulated, or where we don't get as dysregulated as we once did, or where we spend less of our time triggered, and less of our energy consumed with trying to stay regulated, where it happens more naturally. But if your goal has ever been, I'm just trying to heal my nervous system so I never feel dysregulated again, toss that out because it's not going to happen. But chronic dysregulation is an indicator that that emotion is not integrated. And when we have unintegrated emotions, those emotions are often outside our window of tolerance and they will throw us into hyperarousal or hypoarousal. And we're going to go over each one of those emotions. So we'll start with sympathetic activation. This is the nervous system state of fight. The energy or emotion of this state primarily is anger. When we are dysregulated, so remember, right, kind of outside the edge of our window of tolerance is dysregulated. That's when we might be feeling irritable, frustrated. Maybe we're trying to control a bunch of things around us. Maybe we're being condescending to others or kind of bullying. We see bullying with adults online all the time. When we get into hyper arousal, though, meaning the energy of anger has come through and we don't know how to catch it, channel it, and direct it where we need it to go, that's when we're in unintegrated fight or we are experiencing unintegrated anger, which looks like chaotic emotional responses, aggression, rage, violence, abuse, being out of control, being demanding of other people, or threatening of other people. When we integrate that anger and that fight response, meaning when we feel anger coming up in our bodies, rather than collapsing around it, rather than going into the story of, oh, I can't be angry because if I'm angry, then I'm bad, or anybody who's angry and expresses it is always a harmful person, or if I'm angry like that, then that means that I'm bad like them. Like we have all these stories and judgments about anger that causes us to collapse. We don't channel the energy of anger, therefore it's unintegrated. When we can channel that energy of anger, it looks like assertiveness, boundaries, motivation, courage, drive, and leadership. So the exact same energy that it takes for you to be frustrated or rageful or aggressive is the same energy that it takes to be assertive and set boundaries and have motivation and drive. Exact same energy. It's just in one state, you get that energy coming in, you don't know what to do with it. So it's either like a hot potato that you throw at other people or you collapse around it because you have stories about anger. When integrated, same energy is used for more productive things, which is what your fight response is really for. And in a modern society, because we're not often being chased by tigers and bears now. In relationships, the energy of anger serves to let us know when our boundaries have been crossed and when we might need to step in to protect and defend another or ourselves. When it's not integrated and not met with awareness, the energy of anger is outside our window of tolerance. When anger is outside our window of tolerance, we may be unable to hold the energy of anger without hurting self or someone else. So the anger is like a hot potato, and if you can't hold it for yourself, you will throw it at someone else, and then it hurts them. When we have unintegrated anger and also judgment about anger, then we can't hold the charge of anger, so we collapse. We collapse because we repress, meaning we silence or we stop our own anger. We do that because we judge our anger. A lot of us have stories about anger based upon what was modeled to us by people who had their own unintegrated expressions of anger. If we cannot discharge anger in the service of bringing us back to safety, whether that's through self-defense, defense of others, or setting boundaries, we will collapse into immobilization. Remember, the first and primary line of defense in your nervous system is your fight-flight response. If, for whatever reason, including your own suppression of that response, your body determines this is not working for safety, this is not working for survival, then the only place your nervous system has to go is down into collapse. And if you can think of that polyvagal ladder in your head, you are closer to safety when you are angry than you are when you are collapsed. When you can hold the charge and channel the energy of anger, you can assert yourself calmly and firmly. You can set and hold boundaries without being rigid, or you know when it's necessary to be more rigid with your boundaries. The energy can give you courage and motivation, and you can be in grounded, regulated leadership. All of that requires the energy of anger that is met with awareness. Next, we'll go on to the flight state. The primary energy and emotion of this state is perseverance. Dysregulated flight looks like you're stuck in the on position, you're worrying, hypervigilant, constantly busy, multitasking, probably a little bit consumed with perfectionism. When the volume gets turned all the way up on that flight response, that looks like hyperarousal. That is an unintegrated flight or unintegrated perseverance. That looks like chaotic emotional outbursts, anxiety, overwhelm, OCD, being rigid, rushing, panicking, chronic insomnia. When we can integrate that flight response, integrate that perseverance, and unintegrated perseverance is just anxiety. So the integrated form is perseverance, the unintegrated form is anxiety. Integrated perseverance looks like calm determination, knowing when to retreat or when to disengage from conflict because it's not productive, being grounded in your productivity, not basing your worth on your productivity, being industrious and getting stuff done, right? The energy of perseverance is I have the energy to get through this and see it to the very end. So in relationships, the energy of perseverance gives us the energy we need to stick it out through hard times and through conflict and to invest the time and energy needed to repair ruptures. When it's not integrated and not met with awareness, the energy of perseverance is outside our windows of tolerance. It looks like anxiety. We are unable to hold its energy without going into flighty states of busyness, ungrounded productivity, to be able to turn off when we need to. And when we can't hold and integrate that energy, we can hurt others with our obsessive compulsiveness, being too rigid, or throwing your hot potato of anxiety onto other people. When we have unintegrated perseverance or anxiety and judgment about it, we collapse again, because if the body determines flight response has not worked to get you to safety, the only place left to go is down. We collapse because we repress our agency to choose slowness and calm determination. If flight energy and unintegrated perseverance cannot be discharged in the service of bringing us back to safety through healthy retreat from danger or using our calm determination to stick with something, we will collapse into immobilization. But when we are able to hold the charge and channel the energy of perseverance, it looks like knowing when to disengage from conflict that's dangerous or going nowhere, disengaging from circular conversations, which are the worst. We can have a spirit of industriousness. There is a calm confidence in our ability to get things done versus a sense of like urgency and running around like a chicken with your head cut off and getting really distracted while trying to get things done. There's a sense of groundedness in your productivity. You're not just a human doing who's just busy doing shit all the time. And you're able to notice and tend to details without becoming overwhelmed. The energy of perseverance serves to give us the energy that we need to get through challenges and see them to completion. And when we don't meet it with awareness, a dysregulated or hyper-aroused flight state, and the energy of perseverance is outside of our windows of tolerance, it looks like anxiety. We can't hold that energy and channel it without the hypervigilance, the controlling, and the micromanaging, so it devolves into anxiety. Next, we're going to go to the secondary nervous system state of freeze. If you'll remember, this is a sympathetic gas combined with the dorsal vagal brakes state of freeze. The primary energy and emotion of this state is judgment. So, dysregulated freeze looks like guilt, anxiety, procrastination. You have the feeling that the gas and the brakes are being pressed in your body at the same time. Maybe there's a voice in your head that's shitting all over you. You want to do something, but you're unable to move or you don't know what to do. When that volume is turned all the way up, unintegrated freeze looks like panic attacks, extreme anxiety, agoraphobia, codependency, suicidality, overwhelm, and just feeling totally stuck. When we integrate freeze and we integrate judgment, guess what? Now we have the energy to pause and weigh all of our options. We can take as much time as we need to make grounded decisions. We can have discernment. We can be judicious. We can recognize our intuitive resistance. We can be in a state of poised readiness or acute awareness. Notice how, if you've ever had to stop or pause and really weigh the options to make a grounded decision, it requires slowing down. Yes. Like that doesn't happen super quick. You slow everything down, you weigh everything. Maybe you make a pros and cons list. Maybe you talk to some people and get some feedback. Maybe you pray about it. Maybe you draw cards about it. Maybe you talk to your therapist or your coach or someone that you trust about it. Like it requires that the breaks to be like, hold on, I really need to think this out. I really need to have discernment in making this decision. But then guess what? The gas is there when you need to make the decision. So, what a beautiful way our body naturally puts us in the perfect state to have discernment. Like, it's amazing. So, in relationship, the energy of judgment gives us discernment and judiciousness. We have to slow down to carefully weigh our options and feel into what is right for us and for the relationship. When it's not integrated and not met with awareness, the energy of judgment is outside our windows of tolerance. If judgment is outside your window of tolerance, you may be unable to hold that energy without getting overwhelmed and stuck. There is an anxiousness in the waiting that becomes intolerable. When we have unintegrated judgment, we are stuck between options. So that can look like, what should I choose? What shouldn't I do? I should do this. I should do that. What is the right decision here? So it's kind of this exhausted anxiety, tired but wired, but that quickly depletes our energetic resources and leads to overwhelm. That's the state of burnout. If judgment cannot be mobilized so that a decision or a move can be made, we're likely to stay in this frozen state chronically before eventually collapsing into shame and into a feeling of I can't. And that's when the gas just gives up and the brakes are totally shifting and the body is like, we're stopping everything, which we often feel shame about because we judge. When you are able to hold the charge and channel the energy of judgment, you can pause to weigh all options. There is space to lean into resistance to determine if it's intuitive or fear-based. There's a sense of poised readiness, like I don't have to be in action all the time, but I'm ready to spring into action when it's necessary. There's a sense of grounded judiciousness and discernment and a willingness to slow down to come to the right decision. And finally, our dorsal vagal activation. This is the nervous system state of collapse or shutdown, and the primary energy of this state is shame. When dysregulated in a collapse, this looks like isolating yourself, frequent short spells of dissociating, boredom, blankness, apathy, zoning out, mindless scrolling, feeling of helplessness. When unintegrated, the emotion of shame can cause severe depression, chronic fatigue, chronic dissociation, suicidality, and kind of this overall feeling of like, I just can't. No matter what, I just can't. When integrated, believe it or not, even shame can be integrated. We get stillness, we get peace, we get presence and mindfulness, and even shame can serve to bring us back into integrity rather than keeping us stuck. I am not talking about someone else shaming you or putting shame on you. I am talking about the natural feeling of shame that arises when we do things that are outside of our integrity. That emotion is a message from our bodies that's letting us know, hey, you did this thing and it's not in your character. It's not congruent with who you are. So, in relationships, our shame lets us know when we're outside of our integrity, when we have said or done something that is not congruent with our character. This isn't the kind of shame that's put on us. No one is shaming us. The shame is a natural feeling that arises when we need to course correct or take accountability, change our behavior, and come back into integrity. When it's not integrated and not met with awareness, the energy of shame is then outside our windows of tolerance. We may be unable to hold that energy without staying completely immobilized or wanting to hide or disappear. When we have unintegrated shame, there's kind of this chronic sense of shame. It ends up permeating our lives and our relationships. It can lead to unconscious reactions like self-isolation, believing you can't do anything, believing that you're a victim. The body actually produces analgesic chemicals to conserve energy. And so this can chronically lead to being bedridden or a couch potato, which is such a terrible term, which further increases the shame. And if we can't integrate our shame to allow for deep rest, one, or two, mobilize with safety in order to bring peace, we can stay stuck in this state. And in this state, your window of tolerance is the smallest. Everybody's window of tolerance in a chronic dorsal vagal state is very, very, very small. So, with all of this information, what does healing your nervous system actually mean? When you say that you want to heal your nervous system, what you're actually saying is that you recognize that your nervous system lacks three things: capacity, resiliency, flexibility. You're also saying that your window of tolerance is small. Your nervous system is only dysregulated because you can't tolerate whatever's making you dysregulated. And this is why it's relative to each person. There are some things that you can tolerate that I can't tolerate, and some things I can tolerate that you can't tolerate. And that's okay. So, capacity, this is the space that your nervous system has to hold stress. If you think about that bucket, when that bucket isn't totally full, you still have some room in there for some stuff, right? So low capacity will mean that even small stressors are overwhelming and outside your window of tolerance. Again, if you're kind of in a chronic shutdown or collapse state, you're probably noticing that even small stressors are really, really overwhelming. the more capacity you have, the more spacious you feel, and the wider your window of tolerance is. Resiliency is the ability to bounce back after stress. So when your resiliency is low, bouncing back from stress takes a really long time or is very difficult, may even feel impossible. And sometimes collapse is the necessary response for a body which refuses to keep going because it needs deep rest. Sometimes it is. And then flexibility. This is our nervous system's ability to move easily between safety, mobilization, and immobilization without becoming stuck in one state, such as depression is chronic immobilization or OCD is chronic flight mobilization. Those nervous systems stuck in those chronic states don't have flexibility to move in and out of those states. When you take action steps to build your capacity, resiliency, and flexibility, that's when your window of tolerance naturally begins to expand. So, healing does not happen if you're always outside your window of tolerance, but it also doesn't happen if you're always inside your window of tolerance. The sweet spot is when you're riding the edge for temporary periods of time, and then you come back into the window. And then you ride the edge, you expand a little bit, and then you come back into the window. And you're just gradually expanding and contracting that until you can tolerate more and more and more. So maybe you've seen my cold plunge training, or like 4 years ago when I first started doing this work, my kind of catchphrase was, I am comfortable being uncomfortable. And that's kind of a mantra that I use whenever I do cold plunges, just to remind myself that like this is an uncomfortable situation, but I am okay. It is so great to be comfortable being uncomfortable. There is a necessary, embracing of discomfort with this kind of work. We have to be able to be uncomfortable. But if we're constantly uncomfortable, the body is in a constant state of alarm. So constant discomfort is not what we want. Temporary discomfort that we learn to be okay with is great. If the alarm never gets shut off, the nervous system remains chronically activated or chronically immobilized. And being way outside your window of tolerance for extended periods of time is what leads to the development of chronic and mysterious health symptoms. Remember, dysregulation, even if it's hyper or hypoarousal, is always and only ever meant to be temporary. It is never meant to be ongoing. Ongoing dysregulation and hyper or hypoarousal is eventually what leads to the physical breakdown and the physical symptoms of some of these things in our bodies. And the symptoms, as we know, those are our body's way of talking to us. Our body is crying out for safety and for comfort. Sometimes, when it's really severe, psych meds might be the only option that you really have to turn down the volume of your body's cries. And turn down the volume is the key phrase there. Not get rid of, not allow me to ignore, not keep living my life without changing anything. I've been in that state of being so fucking hyper aroused that. There, nothing, no breath work, no supplement, no herb, no nothing, no yoga, nothing would turn down the volume the way that a cocktail of three psych meds did. I mean, it took a lot. And I wasn't even crazy or loopy. Like, I just acted like a normal person. I'm like on fucking antipsychotics and benzodiazepines and all this stuff. And I'm like, wow, I actually feel somewhat normal. That's how freaking hyper aroused I was. So I'm grateful that I had it. My body for months was crying out for safety and for comfort, and I was having all of these chronic and mysterious symptoms that didn't make any sense and weren't showing up on blood work and like all of this stuff. And I was getting told it's all in your head. Your body does crazy things when your nervous system is hyper or hypoaroused for an extended period of time, does it not? Like crazy, crazy things, sometimes that don't make sense. So balance is key, okay? Your comfort zone is such a lovely place, but no growth happens there. Okay. You're allowed to be in your comfort zone, but if you're wanting to grow, you're going to have to learn how to ride the edge. Never being in your comfort zone is stressful to your body. If you're always outside of your comfort zone, your nervous system's capacity, resiliency, and flexibility is going to go down, down, down. So the process of widening your window is a back and forth between stress and coming back to safety. Stress, coming back to safety. Okay, everybody, let's take a quick break. Let's break for, we'll do 6 minutes exactly, because that brings us back at on the hour. Please go get some water, use the bathroom, get some tea, whatever you need to do, and we will come back in 6 minutes.